you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, this evening for the first hour, we're going to have Open Line Wednesday, and so we invite your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, you know, as I'm reading the paper before I come out, and I'm reading about how Condoleezza Rice is over there in Baghdad wearing a combat helmet and a flak jacket and surrounded by people with submachine guns and proclaiming, oh, we're winning the war, everything's getting better, and, you know, it isn't true. And, you know, there's more and more violence over there, and there's more and more hatred. In fact, just this last week, there was a report that large arms shipments had arrived for both the Shia and the Sunni militias so they can continue the civil war there, this terrible bloody conflict that's going on. And nobody ever asked who's supplying the weapons for the militias, who's financing the weapons for the militias, because nobody really wants to ask those haunting questions. Is it perhaps that most of what's going on today has another agenda? Is it possible that there is an organized effort to create chaos and carnage and horror all across America, all across the world, throughout the Middle East intentionally? Well, let me just start. Everybody says, well, you can't compare Vietnam with what's going on in the Middle East, but I really don't think that's true. I think you can compare it very, very definitely. In fact, we may not get a chance to, because I see we have Jeff on the line, and Jeff's calling in from Denver. So without further ado, let's go to Jeff. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jeff, how are you doing tonight?
Doing real good, Dr. Stan. Hey, I've got a question for you. I just bought a piece of property in northern Montana, kind of as a getaway in case things get out of hand. It just seems like everything that's going on right now, just intuitively, I feel like it's coming to a head. So I needed to do something. And I'm just wondering if you, not based on anything specific, you know, we've got everything going on with the news with Korea and among many other things, but just intuitively, when do you think would be a good time to get out of these cities? I'm calling from Denver right now, and I mean, are we going to have any warning, do you think, or is it just going to be bang, you're not going to be able to leave?
Jeff, I honestly can't tell you. I mean, I don't want to make any predictions. I think we'll have a much better idea of what's going to happen. If you have a place up in Montana, I suggest you start getting it stocked and prepared so that you can go there and whatever family you have, at least you'll have the essentials of shelter and food and water. And, of course, you're going to need lots of matches, and you're going to need the firewood. You're going to need, because that's a pretty cold area. And you're going to need means of actually keeping warm up in that area. But you can make the preparations, and I suggest that people do make the preparations. A lot of people, you know, aren't in a position to buy something elsewhere, so they can begin to prepare to shelter in place wherever they are. And we do not know what it's going to be. Will there be a biological attack? I wouldn't be surprised. A recent article in the Washington Post, it didn't appear any other place, but on the Sunday edition, but it talked about how they are creating all sorts of terrible new lethal diseases at Fort Detrick in Maryland in violation of all the international treaties we've signed. But we shouldn't be surprised at that. If you've read Dr. Garth Nicholson's book entitled Project Daylily, you'll find about all the diseases they have created and unleashed on the American people. So, you know, it could very well be that we're going to have a biological attack, or maybe a chemical attack, or maybe even a nuclear attack, because you don't need intercontinental ballistic missiles. All you need is a tramp freighter running along either coast to lob missiles into our major cities along the ocean, and we could take those out with very, very small nuclear weapons. I don't know what it's going to be. You're probably in a better area than in Denver than most people are, but you know, we're just going to have to wait and see how this scenario unfolds. Nobody can predict, and people who make predictions get into real trouble.
Wouldn't it surprise you, though, if nothing happened?
Yes, it would. I'm anticipating something's going to happen simply from watching things, and I've been doing it for 44 years. And, you know, I think that we are closer to really some very, very difficult times than ever before, because what's going on in the Middle East, if you look at it from a rational point of view, really doesn't make sense. Other than the fact that our leaders intentionally want to involve us in a expanded war in the Middle East and really a war with the Muslim world. So why would, in heaven's name, would any logical person want to do that? And the answer is, a logical person wouldn't want to do that, but the people who are running our country are not logical people. Because I think they march to a different drumbeat and dream a different dream because they worship a different God. And I believe that many of them are being drawn into this. And if you go back and you read Ezekiel 38 and 39, you'll find that there is prophesied to be a great attack on Israel. And there will be, and they refer to the islands to the west. Nobody quite knows what that is, but I've always thought it might be United States, and it talks about, you know, how the fire will come out of the air, and of course the flesh will melt from their bones. And I really anticipate sooner or later there's going to be a nuclear attack on America, but I don't know how soon it's coming. But I think you're wise to make your preparations, and I just pray that the Lord will give us you warning to make your preparations and get your family to your hideout. But if not, be prepared to stay where you are. So you'll have alternatives. So do not fail to make preparations where you are for water, for food, for warmth, for all those things you have to have for survival.
Got you. Appreciate it, Dr. Stan. Take care.
God bless. Thanks very much for calling. Okay, that was Jeff calling from Denver. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And something is going to happen. Because we are moving towards what I believe is going to be the climax of history, and we're just going to have to wait and watch and see it unfold. Our job is to reach as many people as we can, to get them prepared and bring them to the Lord if we can. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to give us a call, but right now, let me just comment that, you know, I was trying to think about the similarities between what happened in Vietnam and what is going on in the Middle East today. One of the interesting things is that Henry Kissinger was the National Security Advisor and then the Secretary of State during Vietnam. Now, we could have won the war at any time. How do I know that? Well, I personally interviewed William H. Sullivan, the American ambassador to Laos, who actually went to Paris along with Henry Kissinger to negotiate the Paris Peace Conference. And he personally told me, as I sat in his office at Columbia University, and I think it was about 1980, he said we could have won the war in 2 months. I don't know why we never tried to win the war. I'm not even a military man, but I could have won the war with a few battalions of people just taking them into North Vietnam, and we could have taken out North Vietnam, and the war would have ended. General Lew Walt, who was a four-star Marine general, told me exactly the same thing. We could have won the war at any time in 2 months. We didn't want to. We weren't allowed to win the war in Vietnam, and we're not being allowed to win the war in Iraq today. This is the incredible part of this. We are not being allowed to win the war, and the same people are running the war today that were running it during Vietnam. Trilateral Commission member Henry Kissinger was the National Security Advisor, and then, of course, the Secretary of State. And if you, of course, read the history of that era, you'll find that he was constantly telling Richard Nixon that he could not pull out of Vietnam. You cannot pull out of Vietnam. You must not pull out of Vietnam. And we lost 58,000 soldiers there in a war we were never allowed to win. So why did he want to keep the carnage going and the horror going there? And now, of course, if you've read this latest book by Bob Woodward, State of Denial, talking about what's going on over in the Middle East, in Iraq and Afghanistan, who is the major advisor, not official advisor, for our current president and our vice president, Dick Cheney? Why, it's this same Henry Kissinger, who is telling them there's no substitute for victory, the only way out of Iraq is victory. And here's a man, of course, who insisted on victory in Vietnam when he knew we were not being allowed to win the war. Now, why didn't we win the war in Vietnam? Well, we could have won it at any time. All you had to do was cut off the supplies to North Vietnam. You could have bombed the harbor at Haiphong. You could have sunk a ship in the neck of the harbor so supplies couldn't get in. You could have bombed the rail yards in Haiphong so they couldn't move the supplies from Haiphong over to the areas where they could reload it onto the Russian trucks that were built at the Kama River plant in Russia that we had financed during the course of the Vietnam, the largest truck plant in the world, where in the world was financed and built by the United States during the Vietnam War, so the Soviets could build the trucks that were used to carry the supplies down the Ho Chi Minh Trail to kill our boys. We could have stopped the war in Vietnam simply by bombing the dikes in North Vietnam and flooding the country. We could have stopped the Vietnam War by bombing the electric generating plants in North Vietnam and simply destroyed the whole infrastructure of the nation. Time and time again, every time we would begin bombing Hanoi and just about bringing the North Vietnamese to their knees, they would cancel the bombing. And we were not allowed, of course, to bomb the Ho Chi Minh Trail. We were not allowed to go in and send our troops into Laos and Cambodia, although I'm sure that some of our troops went in there over the objections of Washington, D.C., because we had military leaders who honestly thought we were in Vietnam to try to win the war. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth. And then, of course, the communists, and those of you who heard my interviews with Colonel Dan Marvin, Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin, the communists were shipping supplies up the Mekong River, and we couldn't even inspect the ships to stop them. And so the communists were bringing in supplies in that way to the Viet Cong and to the North Vietnamese regulars who were operating in South Vietnam. And we were never allowed, of course, to cut off the supplies to the troops that were killing our boys in South Vietnam. Our fighter pilots, if they were flying on a mission in North Vietnam, they could see communist planes on the ground, but they couldn't actually fire on them. They couldn't fire on any aircraft batteries unless the batteries were firing at them. They couldn't bomb those planes in North Vietnam. They could only fight back if they were being attacked by those planes. Why would you do something like that? I had a friend who was actually a fighter pilot flying F-4s at that time, and they would send three planes up in a squadron, each carrying a third of a load of bombs, to make it appear that they were trying to do something rather than fully loading the planes. Why, they would each carry a third of the loads of a load of bombs so that there'd be more chance of course, more of our boys being shot down and taken prisoner and tortured. None of this makes any sense unless, of course, you see the way we're fighting in Iraq today. They've never given the men enough men. The generals wanted more men. They were never allowed to have them. We dissolved the Iraqi army, which was a good army and could have been a good ally for us, but we dissolved that and the Iraqi police force and the Iraqi civil service to create the chaos, and then they've done everything they could to block the building of an effective military. And the Major General Paul Eaton, one of the open critics of the president since he's resigned from the military, Major General Paul Eaton, and we have the article if any would like to see it, talked about how he was assigned the task of building a new army for a nation of 25 million people. He was promised 250 men, which really wasn't anywhere near enough to do the job, but they only gave him 60. They would not allow him to use any of the Iraqi soldiers who spoke the language, the non-commissioned officers, so that he could begin to train the Iraqi troops. And as he said in the article, try to build a military for a nation of 25 million people. Without non-commissioned officers is like trying to put a tent up without tent poles. You can't do it. We have never tried to win the war in Iraq. We've lost a lot of men, but then we never tried to win the war in Vietnam. And until you understand that Henry Kissinger and the occult forces he represents, because if you read the article we have from West Magazine, Henry Kissinger was a frequent guest at Marie Strong's occult center in Colorado called La Boca Grande. And the man who accompanied him was a man named Robert Strange McNamara. Robert Strange McNamara, the Secretary of Defense, who sent our boys to bleed and suffer and fight and die in Vietnam, but would never allow them to win. And both Henry Kissinger and Robert Strange McNamara went together to visits, according to the article in West Magazine, to this occult center in Colorado, which was, of course, originally set up by Marie Strong, who is deeply involved in the occult and whose wife is a witch. And, of course, Marie Strong is one of the most wealthy men in the world today. And it is not simply by coincidence both Henry Kissinger and Robert Strange McNamara's names appear on that list of 130 members of the North American group of the Trilateral Commission, whose logo is a circle made up of three sixes with an upside-down broken cross in the middle. Well, let's go to Jay, who's calling us from Washington. Is that Calville, Jay?
Calville, yes.
Okay, fine. Whereabouts is Calville? I don't know it.
Well, it's about 65 to 70 miles north of Spokane.
Okay, did we come in up there all right, or did you listen shortwave or internet?
Shortwave, yes.
Okay, fine. Do you have a question or comment?
The concerns that you bring forth quite perceptively, and the guest hole also is sharing, these things are deeply concerns, and it's right indeed to pray about these things as you encourage us at the end of the program for America and for Radio Liberty and for the matters that are on our hearts before the living God. And the apostle, that is Paul, calls for prayers and speaking forth in these terms. He says, I intend the men in every area to pray, lifting holy hands without anger or diversion. That is kind of disputing. It's a harmony, it's a unity in the flow of the Holy Spirit. The men speaking forth one at a time as the Spirit leads, and there's an encouragement of building up one another. And the word can go forth into these situations as we, you know, we're living holiness, which is through all the provision of God our Savior through the one mediator,
all
Jesus
right.
Christ.
I certainly agree with you. I think we should be praying, but I think we need to be trying first to educate the people about the demonic forces that are at work in our society, at the highest levels of our government as well, because we truly are involved in a spiritual battle, and as Paul had written to the Ephesians, for we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And I think it's there in Washington, D.C., and in New York City today. And I think it's being carried over into Iraq, where we're not allowed to win this war, and we never will. It'll just go on and on and on. Anything else you want to say, Jay?
Well, this is a spiritual struggle, and we have all the provisions and the weapons that God provides to stand in His armor.
But we're supposed to be salt and light. We're to be involved as
yes,
well.
Yes,
all
yes.
All right. God bless you, and thanks very much for calling.
Welcome.
Bye bye. All right, fine. And we're going to go to Jay from, pardon me, Ed is calling from Idaho here in just a moment. Hi, Ed. How are you doing? I'm doing just fine, thanks. Will you hang on there? We'll be with you in just a moment.
Sure.
This is Open Line Wednesday. Give us a call. My telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we truly are involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Okay, Edna, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, good last call and a good reply to him. And I just want to thank you for all that you do, Dr. Stan, for all the hours you spend on the air informing people, keeping them informed of what actually is going on and who's really behind it. And you do a lot of good work. You do a lot of good for all of us. And I just want to encourage you to keep on what you're doing, and the Lord bless and protect you.
Well, I appreciate your words of encouragement, and sometimes it's sort of a lonely situation. I sit here all by myself in an empty studio. I have a screen here, and I have a friend in the other room who tells me who's on the radio, but it's nice to know people are out there listening, and thank you so very much.
So you do a lot of good work for all of us, and I appreciate it. I'm sure everybody else does also.
All right. Well, thank you so very much. Did you have any other points you wanted to make?
That's it.
All right. Fine. Well, thanks very much, Ed.
Good night.
Good night. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, we were just talking about the similarities between Vietnam and what's going on in the Middle East today. Now, of course, both wars were precipitated under fallacious purposes. In other words, the Vietnam War was brought about because supposedly the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which never occurred. In fact, the tape recordings of what happened in the Oval Office were, eventually made available. And you can hear, of course, Lyndon Baines Johnson literally screaming at his Secretary of Defense. Who is the Secretary of Defense? Why, Robert Strange McNamara, who today is a member of the Trilateral Commission, longtime member of the Council on Foreign Relations, one of the elite of the occult, who, of course, directs the course of our nation today. Remember, there's only about 130 members of the North American Group. They call themselves the Group, G-R-O-U-P, the North American Group of the Trilateral Commission. And, of course, I honestly believe that goes back to the group, which was the name that the original secret society that Cecil Rhodes created. In other words, after Rhodes' death, why, there was this group of people, and they didn't want to give themselves a name so they couldn't be attacked, so they just called themselves us or the group, G-R-O-U-P. And they used that same phrase. They were part of a secret society dedicated to creating a world government to bring the kingdom of heaven to earth. It was this idea of the white man's burden, noblesse oblige, why we intelligent people have to help you common people out there. Well, of course, it's so interesting that if you, of course, contact the Trilateral Commission today, they will send you their membership list, and they refer to the North America, those people who belong to the North American organization of the Trilateral Commission, as the North American Group. Well, be it that as it may, of course, we find Henry Kissinger, we find Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, former Secretary of State. We find Robert Strange McNamara there. We find so many people. George Tenet, remember how George Tenet was protecting us, from the radical Islamic people. And he keeps claiming, I kept telling everybody that we were at war with Islam. And if you read the book written by Richard Clark, Against All Enemies, he will tell you that George Tenet kept insisting that, that he was telling everybody we're at war with Islam, but the most amazing thing is nobody ever heard his warning, and I can't help but wonder why that was. Or maybe most of what we're hearing today is simply fallacious to throw us off the track of what really happened on September 11th. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were simply pointing out that the Vietnam War supposedly started because of the Gulf of Tonkin incident, and there wasn't any Gulf of Tonkin incident. It was all contrived, and 58,000 American boys died, and 1 million South Vietnamese and 2 million North Vietnamese, and nobody was ever held responsible. Look back. Who was ever prosecuted for lying to the American people and staging the Gulf of Tonkin incident and the deaths of 58,000 Americans, and nobody is ever held responsible? Who was held responsible for what happened on 9/11, when, 2,700 Americans died, and a lot more would have died? They really intended, I believe, and I sincerely believe this, that 6,000 were going to die. And you remember how, right after 9/11, they kept saying, 6,000 are dead, and 6,000 Americans died, And then it was only 5,000, and then a day or two later it was 4,000. They never anticipated that all those people would get out of the South Tower. But fortunately, there was a very heroic man. He was in charge of security at Morgan Stanley. And as the loudspeakers in the South Tower were commanding the people in the South Tower to stay at their desks, and the people, many of them, could look out the windows of the North Tower and see the smoke and the flames and the bodies plunging down towards the sidewalk. But they were ordered to stay at their desk. Money even wanted to get up and leave. They were ordered to stay at their desk. And the fellow in charge of security at Morgan Stanley, running up and down the aisle, screaming, get out, we're under a terrorist attack. And the people believed him, and they left. And I think there were 2,400, 2,500 people who escaped because of that one man's courage. Because he knew that they were lying to the people. But nobody's ever explained who it was who was on the loudspeaker telling the people to stay there. And some of the people actually tried to leave, and they were approached by guards in the South Tower saying, go back to your seats. We don't want people to try to get out after all people were injured during the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, trying to get out of the building. So you're to stay at your seats. You're not to try to get out. And a lot of them went back, and a lot of them died in the South Tower. But nobody has ever been held responsible. And, in fact, immediately after the 9-1-1 attack, why, the President of the United States went to the Central Intelligence Agency and congratulated George Tenet for the great job that he had done. And nobody was ever held responsible for what happened on 9-1-1. And George Tenet is also a member of the Trilateral Commission, this little 130-people group, member group, that really dominates American policy, has controlled every presidency since 1976, when Trilateral Commission member Jimmy Carter became the President of the United States. And of course, my latest newsletter will go into in great detail how they've controlled successive administrations. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But then, of course, there was a great deal having to do with drugs in Vietnam. If you haven't ever read the book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye by Monica Jensen Stevenson, why, it is available up on the Internet. Most of the copies initially were withdrawn from the bookstore shelves. I know, because I went down to a bookstore one day and it was there, and I went down the next day, asked where the copies were, and they said they were called back by the publisher and never distributed again. Why? Because it talked about the drug trading. Drug trading by the Central Intelligence Agency during the Vietnam War, and many of the bodies of the young men were shipped home in caskets. Had been eviscerated, and their bellies had been packed with narcotics, and that's how they were smuggled into America. And it was a massive CIA operation. And of course, our guest for the next hour will be Rodney Stitch. He's talked to many of the people in the CIA who were involved in this, and were sickened at the things that happened. If you haven't ever read the book, Kiss the Boys Goodbye, you can probably get used copies up on the Internet. Monica Jensen Stevenson got the copyright back from the publisher, and then, of course, she went to Canada. And the book was republished up there, and then somebody bought the publisher and accidentally shredded all the copies. That's why the book is so important. Or you can simply get my 4-tape set on The Men We Left Behind. You'll hear my interviews with Monica Jensen Stevenson. And then, of course, we have another 4-tape set called One Man Returned, The Story of Bobby Garwood. And here's another interview with Monica Jensen Stevenson on her book, Spite House. Of course, she got sued for that one. I believe the CIA arranged the suit to silence her. And of course, the book was pulled off recalled by the publisher just to stop this senseless lawsuit. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, the people who try to get the truth out will come under vicious attack. They can't let the American people know that Vietnam had a lot to do with drugs, as is what's going on in Afghanistan today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is Open Line Wednesday, and we have John calling from Anaheim, California. Hi, John. How are you hearing, a shortwave or internet?
I'm hearing you on the shortwave loud and clear.
Oh, fine. Well, it's good to hear you. This, I know who this is. It's a good friend. I won't use his last name, but he's had his own radio program down in the Anaheim area there for many years. Well, did you have a question or comment, John?
Yes, I did. But before I get into that, I heard you mention that in the case of Vietnam, there was a lot of drugs related to that entire situation. And, of course, there was, even before the United States became involved in Vietnam. Even during the time of Dien Bien Phu, when the press and the news media said that there was so much smoke that the French certainly were losing in their fortification at Dien Bien Phu, which was on the border with Laos. But in reality, that smoke was caused by the harvesting of the opium at Plain de Sars, or Plain of Jars, nearby. But it's interesting how something like that comes into play again over in Afghanistan, as you mentioned, which is a very tragic situation.
Well, I think what's so amazing about Afghanistan, John, is that the American people never ask why it is that when the wicked Taliban controlled the country, why there was hardly any opium coming out of Afghanistan. As soon as the Americans moved back in and took over the country, why the crops were simply, you know, the opium cultivation increased. And, you know, people say, well, why don't you go in there and spray and just kill it? You know, you've got pesticides and herbicides. You just kill the crops. Oh, we couldn't do that. Why? They might shoot down one of our helicopters, and we couldn't do that. We couldn't try to stop the opium trade. All 95% of the opium that's going into Europe today that is destroying the lives of the people there comes from Afghanistan that is totally under American control. Don't tell me we couldn't stop the drug trade if we really wanted to. The war on drugs is like the war on cancer and the war on terrorism. The more you do, why, the worse things get.
Yes, and it's so tragic because the Helmand Valley, where most of the opium poppy is grown in Afghanistan, would be ideal for growing of crops to increase the daily calorie intake of most Afghans.
Right.
But, Dr. Stan, the situation in the Far East with respect to Taiwan, North Korea, and mainland China is seemingly going one step after another. Now,
hold that thought for just a moment. We're going to have to bring our other stations on board, and then we'll be right back with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have John calling from Anaheim. Go ahead, John.
Well, what I'm concerned about, Dr. Stan, I do not believe that North Korea had its first atomic test a few days ago. I think this is one of a series of many tests that have taken place. And, of course, they've borrowed technology which they received from Russia and especially Communist China, which we supplied during the Carter administration to the Chinese through our laboratories at Los Alamos and other areas here in America. And it's somewhat tragic because I don't think the American people are really aware as to how serious the development of the missile and the nuclear technology systems and components are within North Korea. And at the same time, according to Joseph Badonsky, they have been able to build bunker tunnel systems at a depth of perhaps more than 1 mile. So the idea that we can just do so-called surgical bombing and get rid of these facilities is something to be reckoned with as well. Now, also, Dr. Stan, it appears that Taiwan could be a factor, and as I've mentioned to you in the past, I think there's a good possibility if and when we do go into Iran, and I know you seem to say it's just a matter of time that occurs, then I think we're going to see more interplay with Beijing, Pyongyang, and focusing on Taipei and Taiwan.
But I think, John, I agree with everything you've said, but I think that the American people have to understand that North Korea can't even feed itself. How could they possibly build nuclear weapons without, you know, the complicity of, as you pointed out, of both Russia and China helping them? But how could they possibly build, missiles, long-range missiles? I mean, certainly communist China couldn't build a long-range missile until we gave them the technology. And remember, the Carter administration, at the suggestion of Loral Corporation, we gave communist China our most sophisticated and deadly technology that allowed them to build very sophisticated missiles that can target our cities. Why would we have done that? You know, and then, of course, they've given it to North Korea. And what people really don't understand is nothing going on makes sense. During the Clinton administration, why, we were giving all sorts of humanitarian aid and oil and all sorts of other supplies to North Korea to keep that corrupt society in power. And then, of course, when the Bush administration came in, they cut off the aid. And they let South Korea continue the aid, continuing subsidizing North Korea. And remember, we occupy. Our troops are in South Korea. They would not do anything we didn't want to. They're really under American military control. So it's all a game, John. We are building up the best enemies money could buy for that terrible, catastrophic event that I believe is coming, that Henry Kissinger described in his recent article in the Washington Post, a global catastrophe. And it's all being funded with American funds and American technology. Hey, I've got a full board, but why don't you make one more point, and then we'll let you go.
Well, Dr. Stan, I think you're right on target. But unfortunately, until the American people wake up and understand that when we buy these trinkets from China, we're building up the PLA and their nuclear technology.
But, of course, we couldn't be buying them. There were tariffs on them. They refused to put tariffs on them because they want to transfer our wealth and our technology to communist China, which doesn't make sense unless there's another agenda behind everything. Hey, good to hear from you, and thanks so much for calling.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
God bless you.
And you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, let's go to Bart, who's calling from Carmel. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Bart. How are you doing?
Fine, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. Good to hear from you.
Thank you. I'd like to offer what I believe might be coming in the near future for our own country here at home. And I am not new to this, and I don't normally go out on a prognostication limb, but more than ever, I feel that we're coming down to the final weeks, or maybe at the most a couple months before the chaotic phase begins here at home. And I arrived at that conclusion due to the confluence in time of three events. One is the passage last week of the detainee bill, which allows the government to arrest anyone who doesn't agree with it or speaks out against it, or basically anyone they want. And two, now that it's been well over 6 months since Kellogg Brown and Root was awarded a large contract for building many detention facilities here in America. And three, as you know, the aircraft carrier attack battle group Eisenhower is en route and due to arrive in the Persian Gulf around the 21st of this month. And what I feel might be a likely scenario here at home, the one that I prepare for, will most likely be that the wheels of commerce will grind to a halt due to the fragile nature of our economy here at home and the public dependence on everything but themselves. And that is what I feel will be the most likely scenario that we'll confront at first, will be a grinding to a halt of the economic wheels in this country. And I just mainly wanted to offer a suggestion to your listening audience, which might be helpful to them, something which I've done. I went to Radio Shack, and for about $50, you can purchase a set of two small communication walkie-talkie type radios. They take three AA batteries each, and I tried mine out with a friend at a distance and all around, and they work amazingly well. And it's one great way to always be in touch with your relatives or your friends that you're needing to stay in touch with. in a time of emergency, so people might not have thought of that. And I highly recommend it. It'd be the best $50 you'd ever want to spend. Motorola makes them, and they're just great to have around.
All right, fine, Pipe. Thank you very much. But I hope you got, you know, I hope you have some food and water and healthcare products and all of those things, and hope and pray that you never need them, and hope and pray that you're wrong. But just in case you're right, why, I think people ought to start making their preparations, and they ought to start making them right now. Because we don't know what the future holds, but we know something terrible is going to happen to America. Because if God is just, his justice will not sleep forever.
No, and I think at this time, sir, my definition of insanity is to believe that the current state of affairs will continue on indefinitely. I would call that madness. It cannot.
Well, I'll tell you what, most Americans would think you're crazy, but, you know, I'm afraid you're not.
Thank you, sir.
God bless, and thanks so much. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And right now we have Carlos calling from Carson, California. Hi, Carlos. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan. And I really got to commend you for your program. It's very informational, and it's in the best interest of the United States, people of the United States, to have a program like yours. But last week I was so enraged, Dr. Monteith, because the news media focused all of its attention on the Foley episode, and that detracted attention from the enemy combatant law, the Military Commissions Act that just passed.
Well, isn't that the way they always do it? You know, if you it's like the sleight of hand expert. He gets you watching one hand while he's doing his dirty work with the other one. I know exactly what you mean. They did not want the American people to understand the significance. And I think it was called the Military Commission Act, something like that.
Yes, I believe it was. And that really scares the pants out of me, Dr. Stan, because we can be arrested now at the government's whim and disappear totally. And that is such a treasonous act, such a perilous, dangerous act. I wish most Americans would wake up to what's happening. And that gentleman that just previously called, he was talking about the three events, and he's perfectly right. The timing is there now for them to, they're probably waiting for the reaction to some event, which they're going to cause. And of course, people are going to react and start rebelling. That's when they're going to start implementing their act. They're going to say, well, here's our opportunity. Let's do it.
Well, I think the thing that bothers me, Carlos, is that there are a lot of good Americans out there who love this country, but they think that loving our country means we have to support our president and the people in Washington, D.C. And, of course, that's not what this is about at all. If you love our country, it is the Constitution that was created under the auspices of Christians and the whole idea that we were to be a nation under God. And in the Declaration of Independence, it says very clearly, "For we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And to ensure these freedoms, you know, that the governments are instituted among men to ensure these freedoms with the full consent of the governed. In other words, governments were instituted, our government was instituted, to ensure our God-given rights, those we got from our Creator. And since we have these freedoms inherently, why, we did not need government to guarantee them. We only needed government to be there to keep, you know, anyone else from taking those freedoms away from us. We had a right to life. We had a right to liberty. We had a right to the pursuit of happiness. And governments were instituted to preserve our God-given rights. People don't understand that today. They believe that the government is there to protect us and to provide for us, and they don't understand that there really are wicked people who have gotten into every level of our government, and they operate through organizations like the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission. There are only a few thousand of them, but they control all of the important positions in all of the administrations, whether they be Democrat or Republican. And for any of our listeners who'd like to challenge that, please go to my website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and pull down my August newsletter and read it through. And you'll even want to see my September newsletter, which goes into much more detail on that, or certainly go to augustreview.com. That's augustreview.com, and read the article there by Patrick Wood, who deals with a great deal of this same information. People have to understand there are people there who hate America, who believe in world government, who want to destroy our sovereignty, and are using this guise of a war on terrorism, which is as phony as a $3 bill, to strip us of our freedom and, of course, enslave our people.
Exactly, Dr. Stan. You know, you made a point that we're willing to forsake our freedoms to be protected for our protection, and I can see that that type of psychology being generalized by the government into other industries. For instance, in my own industry, which is real estate, they're now inundating us with a tremendous amount of bureaucracy, and the excuse that they give, the legal profession, is that it's for our own protection.
Right.
In real estate, we're having to get all kinds of disclosures now, that are redundant and overwhelming. And they say, well, it's for our own protection. That's the excuse that they give. But ultimately, that's going to undermine the real estate industry, which will undermine the economy of the United States. So that psychology is working for them.
I think you're absolutely right, Carlos. I think what people have to understand is that they're using the threat of the Osama bin Laden, who's over there in a cave, to justify, well, when we get on the get to the airport, we've got to get in these long lines and take off our shoes and take off our belt and take off our shoes and, pardon me, our shoes, our belt, and what else? I guess if you put all the other things, our coats, and, you know, there's no reason for that at all. I mean, after all, you know, the mad shoe bomber, John Reed, was going to try to blow up the plane because he had explosives in his shoes. He was trying to light the fuses there. I mean, if he really wanted to do that, this whole thing was a scam. You'd do it with some sort of an electric thing. You would not try to light up C4, which was in his shoes, by lighting a fuse, because C4 burns. You can burn C4. You have to have an electric charge to set it off. The whole thing was contrived. And
well,
if you go back and you read an article, and it'll be in my next newsletter, it was written by Richard Haass back in 1996, where he talks about the coming attack on terrorism. Now, at that time, he was in charge of research at the Council on Foreign Relations. And in that, he talked about the time that was coming in this war on terrorism, 1996 now, 5 years before 9/11. And we were going to have to stand in long lines to get into government buildings and long lines to get into airports. And we were going to have to accept the increased surveillance as they began to search us and as they began to listen to our telephone calls and as they began to bring Americans under surveillance. Today, Richard Haass is the president of the Council on Foreign Relations and a member of the Trilateral Commission, one of that little club of 130 people in the North American group, the group that really rules America. How did they know 5 years before the 9/11 attack exactly what was going to happen? I would simply ask you. They obviously had foreknowledge. They knew it was all planned ahead of time, but they can't tell the American people that.
Well, yeah, they planned decades ahead, Dr. Stan. The proof is radical Islam has been financed and promoted since the 1800s, first by the British, using the British intelligence. Then, of course, we cut the slack in the 50s. The CIA started promoting it. So, I mean, they've been planning this radical Islam to be pitted against the Christian world and against everybody else since the 1800s.
You're right. Have you read the book, The Devil's Game by Robert Dreyfus?
Exactly.
Isn't that a great book?
That's enlightening so much, I understand. I've just learned so much from that book. It's incredible.
Well, of course, we try to have books that really give you reliable information. That is certainly one of my favorites. And then, of course, we have so many others that go into the background of how this whole Islamic terrorist movement was created. A lot of the books now are out of print, like John Cooley's The Unholy Wars, written in 1999, and Dollars for Terror, which was written in 1999. But if you read those books, you'll find out that the CIA and Pakistani intelligence, the ISI, which was funded by the CIA, And the Saudi Arabia financed this whole radical Islamic movement from its inception at the beginning of the Afghan War in 1980, right up, of course, until 9/11, and they're probably still financing. I mean, who is funding the Taliban today? Who are going down from Pakistan, and going north from Pakistan, into Afghanistan to kill our soldiers and NATO soldiers? I mean, no, it takes a lot of money to run an army, and it's coming out of Pakistan. And who's funding Pakistan? Why our tax money is. And the CIA. The ISI has always been an extension of the CIA. Anybody who's ever studied it realizes that. Hey, anything else you want to say before I let you go, Carlos?
One last question. How many divisions of troops are headed towards the Persian Gulf right now, Dr. Stanley?
I don't know, but there are an awful lot. In other words, it's mainly, I believe, a naval force that's going over there. I don't think they're ever going to give our military people enough men to win the war. Just enough to continue going over there to bleed and suffer and die. Thanks very much.
I heard it was several divisions on another radio station.
We'll have to wait and see. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Laverne calling from Spokane. Hi, Laverne. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. You know, I have a question I'd like to ask the incumbents. How would they vote today like they voted yesterday on NAFTA, CAPTA, and the WTO? You know, I'm going to try to find out before I vote for anybody.
Well, I think most of you ought to just vote out of office. I really do. I mean, because the longer they're there, the more corrupt they become. I mean, I don't think they ought to be there for maybe more than one session at the most, maybe two sessions at the most, but they should not be there for a long period of time because they lose track with those common people and they become part of the elite. And they get used to all the benefits, and they get a big pension, and they get better medical care than you and I are ever going to get, and better pension benefits, and they become the honorable so-and-so. And a lot of them really dishonor our nation. And certainly they are violating their oaths to uphold the Constitution when they vote for most of the legislation that's there. And, you know, there's one doctor back there. His name is Ron Paul. He's a physician. They call him Dr. No. Why? Because he consistently gets up and votes no. And he makes his decisions on the Constitution. The rest of these turkeys who have sworn to uphold our Constitution consistently vote against the Constitution time after time after time. And I think that anybody who votes against the Constitution, no matter how justified, no matter how altruistic the legislation should be simply voted out of office.
It's amazing how many there are professional politicians like Kennedy there are. And why are people voting them back in? You know, even the Democratic Party should be cleaning house, you know.
But
they've gotten so bad.
Laverne, both parties are controlled by the same people. I mean, they make a sham of the electoral process. And as Professor Quigley said on page 1247 of his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, we have elections every 4 years. So that the people can vote the scoundrels out, but we want to make sure that the foreign and domestic policy always remains the same. And as you said, we need two political parties that are essentially the same. That's what the game's all about. That's why they don't want third parties. And if there's any hope of saving America, it's going to be a third party backed by the American people and backed by talk radio and the Internet so we can reach the public because the major media is all controlled in this country.
What's so tragic.
Well, anyway, God bless you. We're out of time, Laverne. And your job is to get people up there in the Spokane area listen to our programs every evening. Will you do that?
I sure do.
God bless you. Thank you so very much. Well, of course, I always enjoy Open Line Wednesday. I hope you do, too, and we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we really do need your help, especially at this time, to keep us going. And we hate to cut back on any of our shortwave or our satellite or our Internet or certainly our radio stations. We have a number of stations. Our Saturday program goes out to actually over 30 stations or only half an hour, but we hit some of the biggest markets in California. And our job is to try to reach the people. Your job is to help us if you possibly can. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 because there's never been a time in our nation's history that the American people needed the truth more than today. many good people cannot believe what's going on. They cannot believe that there are people in Washington, D.C. who are knowingly poisoning the American people with fluoride and with NutraSweet and mercury and destroying the minds of our children. And they cannot believe that when our young people graduate from high school and they're tested competitively, they can't compete with children anywhere else in the world because their brains, their minds have been severely damaged. They can't believe that it's possible that we would have one in every six American children with some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality that was inflicted upon them by government policy. Oh, they couldn't believe that sort of thing. And our job is to get them to know the truth. And you can go to our website and document everything I've said, or you want the documentation on it, we'll be glad to provide it for you. Your job is to get people to think. If we can get them to challenge one thing, to realize they've been lied to, maybe we can get them to challenge other things as well. So we have so much material at Radio Liberty. If you haven't read David Rockefeller's memoirs, where he talks about how he is part of a cabal involved in a conspiracy to create a new economic order, page 405 of his memoirs, or that his daughter is such a good friend of Fidel Castro, this ruthless murderer who killed 15,000 people when he came into power, and who comes regularly to New York City to talk to the UN and address the Council on Foreign Relations. It's all there in the book. Of course, they don't talk about 15,000 people he killed, but we carry David Rockefeller's memoirs. We have so many tape sets. We have a wonderful four-tape set on O.J. Simpson. You've never heard the true story of what really happened that night and who it was who really killed Nicole Simpson. We have a great four-tape set on that subject, and we have information you're not going to get elsewhere on the Skull and Bone Society, on the Bohemian Grove. In fact, if you have not yet seen Alex Jones' video on the Bohemian Grove, we carry it because he did such a good job getting that out, and we commend him for it. You can just call in for the Alex Jones video on the, and it's really got multiple parts to it. It's not just one, but a series of them on the Bohemian Grove, and you'll actually see the ceremonies there when, of course, they sacrificed Christ. Well, they call it care, but they're really sacrificing Jesus Christ. They sacrifice him on the altar every year. It's feigned human sacrifice, but they're sacrificing care so they can do whatever they want to, and they have naked people running around naked there in the woods. Ladies and gentlemen, these are the presidents of the United States and the vice presidents, the head of our corporations, and they almost all of them belong to the Bohemian Grove. You need to get the information. And so much to the stories that you're never going to hear elsewhere. Oh, they're so concerned about Congressman Foley and pedophilia. Why, they bring in little boys out of the Bohemian Grove to serve as the lusts of world leaders and women as well. In fact, one of the interviews we do is with a woman who was sent there by the CIA as a sex slave for the world leaders at the Bohemian Grove. So we want to get the material on the Skull and Bones on Bohemian Grove on. So many things are available from Radio Liberty. Remember, we're having an all-day conference on the 29th of October right here in the Monterey Bay area. You'll certainly want to get your reservations. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and for our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty. For myself and my wife and my staff, because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And, Gord, we'll be back here in just a moment or two with the next hour of Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station we're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. And, well, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. With us this evening is Rodney Stitch. And Rodney's been at this for a very, very long time. He's written a number of books, and we carry a number of them. We carry his book on Friendly Skies, Defrauding America, Drugging America, and, of course, he's written all sorts of other books that many of them are available up on his website, and you can just pull them down on your computer if you'd like to. But Rodney is really one of those rare people who's been willing to dedicate his life totally to trying to get to the American people and tell them the truth. And actually, of course, he was imprisoned at one time, and his crime was he was trying to report a crime to the federal judges who did not want to hear about the crime, because if they heard about it, they'd have to do something. Sort of like John Ashcroft, the Attorney General of the United States, told the director of the FBI, according to the director's testimony, the acting director, that he didn't want to hear anything more about this terrorist attack coming on America. He just didn't want to hear it, not to tell him again. And that's what happened with Rodney when he was trying to tell the judges about corruption in government. And so he was actually sent to prison for filing these repeated files after he was ordered not to. And when he was there, he had an opportunity to meet the people from the CIA and from the FBI and the DEA and other government agencies who were in prison not for committing a crime, but trying to expose crimes. And this led him to an amazing odyssey, and as he appeared on more and more radio and television programs, why other people in government would come in and bring him information. And you've met an awful lot of fascinating people, haven't you, Rodney?
Well, that's for sure. That includes not only FBI, CIA, DEA, former drug smugglers, former mafia figures, you name it. And it's really very interesting. You know, at first, I was trying primarily to inform the public and bring a halt to some of this crud. But after a while, I found it so interesting. I mean, it beats a lot of the mystery books you could find.
Because this is really true. That's the thing.
And not only, it's also very interesting, besides becoming informed. And that's one of the shortcomings most people have today. They don't know the history of the corruption in all three branches of government. So they can't really properly evaluate what's going on now. And this is where I feel the books would be very helpful.
Well, I think one of the most interesting stories, of course, we hear so much about the wicked Iranians who kidnapped our hostages after the Ayatollah Khomeini came to power and then, of course, held them for 144 days. And, of course, they're just terrible people because they held our hostages and they wouldn't give them back. The truth of the matter was they kept trying to give them back and we wouldn't take them. And a lot of that got into something called the October Surprise. And, of course, Rodney had a chance to become very close friends with a pilot who took George Herbert Walker Bush, who is running for the vice presidency, to Paris, I guess it was in October of 1980, to negotiate with the Iranians so they would not release the hostages until after Ronald Reagan was inaugurated to the presidency. And so they kept those people there for a long time unnecessarily. But I'm going to let Rodney tell you that story about the October Surprise that is totally denied by the administration. Rodney, why don't you tell the story of the October Surprise? I think that's one of the most amazing stories.
Yes, I first discovered it when you already mentioned that they sent me in the pokey. You know, the reason I got there, when I first filed the first few actions trying to expose the corruption, first it was the corruption in the government's aviation safety offices that was associated with a number of major airline disasters. But and I filed this under the federal crime reporting statute, and that's 18 U.S.C. Section 4, which requires anyone who knows of a federal crime to report it to a federal judge or the federal officer. Well, since Congress kept covering up for it, I figured, okay, I'll report it to a federal judge and at least make a record the way it'll be a little more difficult to cover up. Well, federal judges must receive this as part of their administrative duties. Well, they refused to, and they blocked it. And what they did, they issued an unlawful and unconstitutional order barring me for the remainder of my life from filing any papers in federal court. Now, those orders still exist. But anyhow, then I'm finding out about more criminal activities, including October Surprise. And I was getting this right from the horse's mouth, the people who were part of it.
Were you in the pokey at this time?
Well, then they sent me what they did. What they did, first I was trying to report some other crud, drug trafficking. But anyhow, so they charged me with contempt of court.
Because, of course, you were trying to do what the law requires, and that's a report of federal crime.
Yeah, so anyhow, so then they sent me in the pokey, and then I got to meet a number of people that were involved during the 1980s in the various CIA activities. And, of course, the way the government silences these guys is they charge them with a criminal offense, and they end up in federal prison. So I met them, and I met Ruspacher, accidentally, and we became friends. And he was very reluctant to reveal these things.
Well, now, where did you meet Ruspacher? Was he in prison at the time?
Yes. So we were, matter of fact, it was in Dublin, California, where we first met. So anyhow, then I got released, and there was an attempt on his life, which I describe in the book. So he called me around midnight, and it's very interesting.
Hold that thought with me back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Rodney Stitz, author of Unfriendly Skies, Defrauding America, Drugging America, and actually a whole flock of other books, which you'll find out in his book from his webpage, and we'll tell you later how to get there. But Rodney is telling about his meeting of a man named Günther Ruspacher, and Günther is one of the most amazing men I've ever met. I had the privilege of spending an evening with him, but I'm going to let Rodney tell you about him. I mean, talk about, you know, the James Bond. He would certainly be embarrassed by James Bond. You know, James Bond was a phony compared with Günther Ruspacher. And so you met him in Dublin. Was he in a federal prison at the time or what?
Yes, that is correct. Well, what happened, he called me one night, and apparently there was a murder attempt on him, assassination attempt. But anyhow, I said, Günther, because he had already hinted at the October Surprise, and I said, look, Günther, call me in the morning and let me take your declaration over the phone. Well, that was the start, and so we had hundreds of hours of deposition-like questioning where he's describing the details of the October Surprise and where the meetings were held, some of the people who were there, when it occurred, how money, and also how military supplies were secretly removed from National Guard armories and sent to Iran. So it's interesting reading. And all of this also helps to show why the Iranians are, displeased with us and things like that. So it's very educational, and really you should know the culture that exists to better understand what's going on today.
How did Gunther get out of the prison there in Dublin? Because I know then eventually, the first time I ever ran him, he was in prison, I think down in Louisiana somewhere there.
Well, let's see. It's been so many years ago, but he got out, but then they arrested him again. The state of Missouri arrested
Missouri
him.
Was in Missouri, because I remember they were they didn't call counties counties. They had some other word for them. And I remember talking. I wanted to track down this story. I didn't know whether to believe it or not. And I got hold of the man who was assigned to defend him, and he told me, he said, I've been practicing law for 40 years. I've never seen a case like this. Why, we've had five judges recluse themselves from this case. And of course, the federal government refuses to release any records at all on this man. I don't know who he is, but obviously something is very strange. I've never seen a case like it before.
Well, you know, he was sheeped out of the ONI, that's the Office of Naval Intelligence, and he went into great detail, gave me documentation about how the CIA set up savings and loans and how the CIA was defrauding the savings and loans and the HUD program, and he gave me the names of the companies and the addresses and things like this, and I could ask him the same question 5 years later. He'd give me the precise name and details. So none of this was made up. And then he described to me how he delivered, he was in a fleet of five SR-71s that were flown to Russia. And at first, this was awfully hard for me to believe. But I later on got a confirmation from someone who was in Moscow at a later date that saw one of the SR-71s in the hangar over there. So it's fabulous what he had to say. And the average person would never believe this unless they read the details.
Yeah, well, I think what really convinced me that he was really who he said he was, I'd of course, got some of his writings, and I'd read them up on the Internet, where he's talking about, of course, the Federal Reserve and how it had to be, you know, neutralized, because if we did not stop their control of our monetary system, we would eventually lose our freedom. But I interviewed him one evening, and in the process of the interview, as he was telling me how the CIA and the KGB were closely together, and, you know, that they certainly many times, you know, would help one another. This was during the process of the Cold War. And I looked at him and I said, you know, that reminds me of a book I've read called, a docudrama I saw on television called The Brotherhood of the Rose with Robert Mitchum. And he said, well, that was my story. He said, without a moment's hesitation, he said, in fact, the author of the book dedicated the book to me. Well, now I thought, now I've really got him, because I'm gonna prove him wrong. This can't be true. And of course, I went down the next day. I got the book, and there in the dedication, you know, a special thanks to Pete and Joe, but I want a special thanks to Russ, who gave me the information I needed to write the book, or words to that effect. That's the story of the Brotherhood of the Rose. Did he ever tell you about that?
I think that's one that I don't recall. But you know, we had hundreds and hundreds of hours of tape telephone conversations. So there's so much he told me, a lot of it isn't even in the book. Now, one of the things he was telling me, and this is especially important as it relates to Afghanistan, he was telling me how 2 years prior to the Soviets going into Afghanistan, he was there carrying out assignments, funding and arming rebels. These are the religious nuts over there that were protesting the government's attempts to modernize the government. So the government, out of desperation, here we have the CIA arming the rebels. So the government, to defend themselves, asked Russia to send in some troops. And of course, and so here we have the United States White House politicians starting the mess that still exist now in Afghanistan.
Now, basically, and what happened was that the United States CIA was funding the rebels who were opposing the Soviet puppet government in Kabul in Afghanistan. And because, of course, the puppet Soviet government was about to fall, the Soviets then invaded Afghanistan to support their puppet government. And that then precipitated the Afghan War. And then at that point, why, of course, the CIA went all over the Muslim world, recruited warriors, trained them in terrorism and explosives, and then, of course, began teaching them all about radical Islam, distributed copies of the Quran, and there's a question whether they were printed at Langley, the CIA headquarters, or elsewhere. And then the USAID even came in, and we have the clippings, and we can document this whole thing. USAID spent $51 million on Islamic textbooks to teach the young Islamic boys all about the glories of dying, killing the infidels, and jihad, of this whole radical Islamic movement. Anybody would like to verify that, will give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a copy of the article out of the Washington Post, of all places, on the ABCs of jihad, about how we funded $51 million of textbooks pushing this radical form of Islam. So, I mean, I did not know that Gunther had actually been over there as part of this CIA move of training these Afghan rebels and indoctrinate them in radical Islam, which was not a factor before we went over there and created this Islamic terrorist movement we're fighting today.
The only comment I can add to that is that the information I have is that the Soviets were invited into Afghanistan.
But that would be by the local government there, which, of course, was a Soviet puppet government.
Yes.
But you'd expect the Soviet puppet government to invite in the Soviets. Otherwise, the Mujahideen, the Islamic warriors, would have taken over the country, which they eventually did anyway.
So it just shows one more example of the blowback from the actions of our White House politicians.
Right. Well, go ahead then. I think. What else did you learn from Gunther?
Oh, Dad. Let me see. It's endless. Of course, as far as the drug smuggling, he was going into great details on that. He was telling me how the bankruptcy courts or how the CIA is involved in forcing companies into bankruptcy, or those who are in bankruptcy seize their assets. And he gave me a lot of details on that, but that's also something I personally discovered about the corruption in the bankruptcy courts. And, oh, there's so many things. I would almost have to scratch my head to remember what all of them were.
Well, anyway, he was a fascinating individual who had close ties to international intelligence agencies throughout the world. And I think you're so fortunate to have that material, and I hope you have it all carefully cataloged away someplace. Don't you tell a lot of this in your book, Defrauding America?
Oh, by all means. And it's not only, Gunther was more or less, he was the start. And then as I was getting on radio and television shows and the books became known, other insiders came to me, and this is CIA people. I've got people who were involved in the assassination teams that were hunting the defecting GIs in Vietnam. I've got people who headed CIA airlines and describing the drug smuggling, describing how they delivered arms to the Irish Republican Army, things like that. It's endless.
I know. In fact, the story of how we had these assassination teams going out and killing Americans who had defected or simply deserted in Vietnam, and we killed them. That was the story Monica Jensen and Stevenson told in their book, Spite House. And so they got a phony, lawsuit against her and forced the publisher to recall the book. That's how they control what the American people hear and read. And if you have not read the book, Spite House, or certainly would like to know the story, we have a 4-tape set, and one of those tapes is with Monica Jensen Stevenson. So, and they really did have these teams out killing Americans, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, These are things the average person out there won't believe.
Well,
unless they
hold
read
that
a
thought.
Book
we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, Rodney, why don't you just, is there anything else you can tell us about these teams? I know we've talked to people from Operation Tailwind. We have a four-tape set on Operation Tailwind, which was, of course, involved sending a team into Laos to kill American troops.
Oh, now, first of all, I described that in the book, Defrauding America. And when I first heard about it, oh, several years before Operation Tailwind was described on television there. But I heard it from a fellow who went, he was a black in the military, and he was head of an assassination team. And he's describing how they were in Vietnam before the Vietnam, before we even invaded Vietnam. He was there, and he says the purpose was to destabilize the area, and they were on a murdering spree, murdering anybody they could find. And then eventually he got into the hunting down the defecting GIs, and but that's basically what's in the book.
I mean, this is such a horrible thing to contemplate, and you would think that there was any truth to this. There would have been major investigations and major trials, but, of course, it's been totally covered up. And that's how he occurs to keep the young men going over there and fighting and obeying orders, because if they don't, they get killed. Do you get at all into Operation Phoenix at all?
Operation Phoenix, there is some in the book on that. I mean, there's so many operations. I got to think real hard.
That was the one, of course, where we would go in and we would kill. They killed between
20,000 and 60,000
yes. people who were Vietnamese, who were accused of being sympathizers.
Oh, absolutely. I have a great deal in the book on that. You know, I've written about 13 books, so sometimes I have to think now because we're going back a number of years. But yeah, oh, there's a lot in there about that and how armor. Like Armitage, he was familiar with that. Colin Powell was familiar with the operation. So he had, they have key positions in the White House, or they had during this administration. So, but, you know, one thing I discovered over the years is that one of the most common traits in the United States is cover-up. And anybody who, if you're in government and you try to reveal something, you're going to suffer for it. And that's even in the media, like the media people who stuck their neck out with Operation Tailwind. I mean, they're not around anymore. And there's several other cases I write about where some media people try to expose some high-level government corruption. They're gone.
No, of course, with April Oliver, I do have a fascinating interview with her. In fact, I have two of them. And April Oliver was the one, CBS, I believe it was, that actually told the story on a documentary on CBS. And of course, she was ended up getting sued and by some of the people. She got ended up getting fired by CBS. But she ended up countersuing. And she won the case, and she made enough money that she was able to buy a new house and new car and go to law school. And she'll never get another job in the media. But she really doesn't want it because she realizes they don't want the truth out there. Everything, as you say, is cover-up. Her name is April Oliver. You can hear her at our Tailwind set.
Yeah, I describe April Oliver.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Rodney was just talking about Operation Tailwind and April Oliver, and he was saying that one of the big problems is anybody in the media who tries to tell the truth is destroyed and will never get a job there again. And he was mentioning April Oliver. Do you have anything on April, or would you like to talk about her? She was an amazing woman.
Well, I go into great detail in the book about it, and I have part of the transcripts of the of the show, and I also describe the lawsuits and things like that.
You have some of the testimony of Admiral Thomas Moore, who
yes.
Was such a gentleman. He could not lie under oath, and when push came to shove, even though he'd been ordered not to tell the truth, he did tell the truth, and he won the lawsuit for April Oliver. It's an amazing story, and you'll never hear this on 60 Minutes for sure. But you have that. Which book is that in now?
That's in Defrauding America.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's one reason to get the book, if for no other. And, of course, it's an excellent book. We carry it because
yeah,
we want you to have access to the truth that you're not going to get through regular channels. Go ahead.
Stan, there's so much in Defrauding America. The latest one. Now, we have the third edition is hardcover. But the fourth edition now is in two volumes. I have volume one and volume two. Because I figured, well, since this is more or less a continuing culture, and for those who are serious about wanting to know what goes on in government, I thought, well, since all of these things that happened 20, 30 years ago are relative to what's going on today, I just have it all in that one book, but I went to two volumes now.
Yeah, well, of course, what we're seeing today in Iraq and Afghanistan is Vietnam all over again. It's deja vu all over again. It's all the same problem. It's many of the same people doing the same things, still betraying American boys and sending them to fight and bleed and suffer and die, but never be allowed to win.
Yeah, it's a shame that the American public doesn't realize the horrible, all of the GIs that were killed as a result of the White House politicians, like Korea. Using lies, we invade Korea. Using lies, we invade Vietnam. Using lies, we invade Iraq. Look, over 600,000 people have died in Iraq thanks to President Bush's order to invade that, and thanks also to all the people who supported the invasion.
You know, one of the things that really disturbs me, there's a report that just came out today for the people who would want to question what Rodney is saying. There's a British group that's gone over and done extensive surveys in Iraq, and they claim that about 600,000 civilians have died. 600,000 civilians have died, and the president says, well, we were just using the best intelligence we had. I mean, what do you mean? The CIA said they didn't have any, Saddam didn't have any nuclear weapons, wasn't working on nuclear weapons, and the White House got people who would say exactly what they wanted because they wanted to invade Iraq. It was planned ahead of time, and 600,000 people have died. Maybe the figure isn't accurate. Maybe it's only half that number. But if one person dies unnecessarily because we've been lied to by people in government, somebody has to be held responsible.
But, you know, right now there's virtually no outrage. I mean, there's some. But, I mean, for someone to lie like this, a serial lying, and for so much grief to occur, and for America... the end of this, the young people, I think, can look forward to some brutalities occurring here in the United States. I expect, just like I write in Defrauding America, about these suitcase nuclear bombs that were smuggled out of the Soviet Union. I'm surprised none of those have gone off yet in the United States, but I would expect them to. And you can't. The way we bully people, we invade their countries and all. I mean, what else can you expect but this terrorism?
Well, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose, and I really tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and His justice will not sleep forever. Well, I guess this evening is Rodney Stitz. And, of course, when we get back from the break here, we will tell you how to get his book, Defrauding America, how to get his book, Drugging America, how to get his book on Friendly Skies, and then we'll let Rodney tell you about all the other books he has and how you can get to his website. Well, Rodney, why don't you go ahead? Certainly you have so many things in your... I think one of the hardest things, I think, for the average American to believe is that the Central Intelligence Agency, or at least some segments of the Central Intelligence Agency, are involved in dealing and smuggling drugs. Would you like to talk about that at all? Because that certainly added date to the Vietnam War, and I believe it's still going on in Afghanistan today.
Well, now, I have one book that especially focuses on the drug smuggling of the of CIA people. When I say CIA people, I'm referring to people who are employees of the CIA and who work with these employees, like former CIA people. But I also describe the drug smuggling and defrauding America, but drugging America goes is exclusively on that. But it's not a lot more than the CIA. They work with the military because a lot of the drug smuggling went on. The drugs went through military bases, and I go into how drugs were hidden in the bodies of GIs that were killed in Vietnam. And the other ways of smuggling drugs. And now, if you want me, I can describe some of the other books real briefly.
You go right ahead.
Okay, now, Defrauding them. All of these books, incidentally, Stan handles some of them. Now, all the books can also be downloaded onto your computer. Matter of fact, every one of the books, you can download at least half of them at no charge. All you do is go to the defraudingamerica.com website. But having said that, let's see, the first book I wrote was Unfriendly Skies. And what that does, it's now in the fourth edition, incidentally. What that does, it takes you behind the scenes and details the corruption that went on, some of the specific crashes that resulted from that, and it brings you right up to 9/11 to show you the corruption in the CIA that made possible the conditions that enabled terrorists to hijack four airliners, and that hasn't even been addressed by any government agency. Then I have one book called Blowback 9/11 and Cover-up. Now, that goes real, that focuses entirely upon the 9/11, the corruption in the FAA and the government's aviation safety offices.
Hold that thought right there, Rodney. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Arthur Stan. Our guest is Rodney Stitz. And Rodney, before we go on, I want you to get your webpage out and how people can get in touch with you and what you're doing.
Okay, the web page is defraudingamerica.com. There's a tremendous amount of information there that would easily make an extensive college education if they had such a course. And it's all detailed and documented. There's no conspiracy theories. There are obviously conspiracies, but I focus on the facts. And and let's see, as I started to mention earlier, one of the books is Blowback 9/11 and Cover-Up, and that goes into the corruption in the government's aviation safety offices that made 9/11 possible. It goes into my attempts to file federal action shortly before 9/11, exposing these things, and then my lawsuits filed in the New York federal courts after 9/11 and how federal judges blocked me from reporting this. It's very interesting. And I have one, Iraq Lies, Cover-Ups, and Consequences, and that I go into, just as it says, the lies relating to Iraq and I showed all of the documented information that was known prior to the invasion of Iraq, that that disputed every single thing that Bush and his team was saying.
Well, in any of your books, you actually cover what Gunter Rosbacher told you about being over there in Afghanistan before the Afghan War, beginning to trade the Mujahideen in preparation for the Afghan War.
Right, and this is something that is virtually unknown about the U.S. involvement in subverting or in arming the rebels that brought down the Afghan government. And, of course, with that, this is where all of the tragedies occurred in Afghanistan. And, of course, that gave rise to the Taliban. So it shows how the White House politicians and the CIA did things that brought all of this about. And this is virtually unknown.
Well, I think what most people don't know is that the CIA did fund the Taliban, and certainly the Pakistani intelligence funded the Taliban, and the Saudis funded the Taliban back in 1994 when this whole thing was getting off the ground. And if you listen to President Bush's speech on the 20th of September, 2001. That's the 20th of September, 2001. You can get it on the at whitehouse.gov. He says in that speech that in 2001, the United States was the largest source of humanitarian aid for Afghanistan. Well, since the Taliban controlled Afghanistan, we were the largest source of humanitarian aid for the Taliban. We were funding the wicked Taliban who were giving sanctuary to the wicked Osama bin Laden. And there's something wrong with that picture.
You know, the United States, during the 1980s, and this is during the Reagan-Bush administration, I go into great detail of how the United States secretly funded and armed Iraq and provided them with some of the so-called weapons of mass destruction. And this was going on until just a few months before the Iraq invaded Kuwait, and they invaded Kuwait after first checking with April Glaspie, if I remember the ambassador's name, U.S. ambassador, who responded to Saddam Hussein that the United States had no interest in Iraq's conflict with Kuwait. So then Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. And so it shows that, again, the secret arming and funding of Iraq by the United States helped bring about all of the Iraq fiasco. And, I mean, this is really, if so many people weren't killed in the process, this would be hilarious. But the public doesn't know this.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Iraqis are not dying laughing.
I mean, it's, you know, I flew in the Middle East. I was flying plane loads of Muslim pilgrims throughout the Middle East, going to the holy cities of Mecca and Medina. I was flying them out of Baghdad, Tehran, Beirut, Jerusalem, and they liked us in those days. Matter of fact, I was even in Iran the morning that the CIA engineered the revolution that eliminated Mossadegh and brought in the Shah.
That was in 1953, right?
Yes, and then, of course, that eventually ended up in the Islamic Revolution in 1979, and, of course, that was the October surprise. And so no matter where you look, it's the blowback from the U.S. politicians that brings all this about. And it's really... you know, I'm at 83, so I won't be around when the public has to really pay the price. So, but my feeling is, if the public chooses to remain in denial so much, they have brought it about, so let them pay the consequences.
Well, your job and my job is to share what we know, and I personally, of course, had an opportunity of talking to the American ambassador to Iraq. His name was William H. Sullivan, and he was there immediately before they seized the embassy. The students seized the embassy the second time, but they seized it the first time, held it for 4 days when William H. Sullivan was there, and he told me that they said, look, I mean, we're going to let you go now, but if you bring, or the American government allows the Shah of Iran to go to the United States, we'll come back here and seize the embassy again. So William H. Sullivan told me he came back to the United States and he told President Carter. He told Zygmunt Brzezinski that the Iranian students had said, you bring the Shah of Iran to the United States and we'll seize the embassy again and hold it. And so what did they do? They immediately brought the Shah of Iran to the United States for medical treatment. And then they brought in a Canadian doctor to work on him. Why didn't they send him to Canada for the Canadian doctor? Because they wanted the Iranians to seize the embassy, which they did. And as soon as they did, we froze all of the Iranian funds, billions of dollars in our banks, and they couldn't get it out. And that's why the Iranians wanted to give back the hostages, and we wouldn't take them. And Don Hanson, Congressman Hanson, went over there and negotiated with the Iranians to free the hostages. And he ended up being sent to prison on trumped-up charges, and then they had the October surprise. What the American people have never been told is the truth about the Iran hostage crisis. There was as phony as the $3 bill and all those yellow ribbons that were wrapped around the trees and people were wearing on their sleeves. They never were told the truth. Would you agree with that, Rodney?
I mean, giving the public a lot of baloney seems to be the standard practice. And of course, since the public swallows it so easily, what can I say?
Well, our telephone number, if you're out there in the listening audience and would like to talk to Rodney, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But Rodney is one of the most knowledgeable people I know. And he's a little older than I am. He's got all of his facilities. I hope when I'm 83, I'll be as sharp as he is. His books are invaluable for your library. Defrauding America, Drugging America, Unfriendly Skies, and then, of course, all the other ones he writes on 911. And he's got how many books now? 12 books?
12. And, you know, there's been, since I put them up on the Internet for free download, that's portions of it, there's been about 80,000 downloads. That's in the last about 7 months. So at least some people are reading it. Main thing I'm interested in is just getting the word out because, at 83, I'm not going to be around much longer. So I'm just trying to get the word out to as many people as possible.
Well, I appreciate everything you do, Rodney, and I really do appreciate you being willing to come on with us here in the evenings and share your thoughts on this. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about the man who managed the CIA bank in Hawaii? And, of course, if you go to work for the CIA, ladies and gentlemen, they will turn on you and they'll send you to prison, as they have with so many people. Edward Wilson spent 20 years in prison. He was commissioned by some branch of the CIA to smuggle drugs to Gaddafi over in Libya. And we actually, it's a great book. We've did an interview, and I think we'll do another interview with the author. It's called, License to Kill. And he tells about Edward Wilson. The CIA said, we never heard of this guy. And they said, what do you mean? I used to work for you, and you told me to go over there and smuggle the weapons to Gaddafi. No, we didn't. And he spent 20 years in prison because the CIA lied. And they swore in court that he was not ordered to do it. And finally it all came out, when we were supposedly opposing Gaddafi in Libya, we were financing the fellow who was smuggling weapons to him. So, we sold weapons to both Iran and Iraq all during the Iran and Iraq war. What madness is that? Why would you finance both sides unless you wanted as much carnage and death and horror as possible? So, anyway, go ahead.
One of the things that surprised me along the same line you just mentioned, I have been in touch with many of the pilots who were flying arms down to Nicaragua, as we were subverting their government, and they would bring drugs back. And they were telling me that they were bringing the arms to both sides. And it says, well, how can this be? You know, because this is what Reagan and Bush was saying. They say, well, how are you going to keep this war going if we don't arm both sides?
And people have forgotten that the United States government toppled General Somoza and brought the communists to power. And then we could finance and arm the communists. And then we could finance and arm the Contras. Isn't that great? And we got all those good drugs in return.
What a system. I mean, you can't beat this. There should be some type of a continuing TV show on all of this.
Well, it might not last very long. You know, Gary Webb, who actually wrote about what you're talking about the CIA involvement with the Contras and smuggling drugs back into America, and he actually was a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who actually eventually was let go by the San Jose Mercury, not because anything he ever wrote was wrong, because it wasn't, but because pressure was brought to bear on the San Jose Mercury, and they sacrificed him. Eventually, of course, he couldn't get a job anywhere else in the media, and eventually committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice to make sure he was dead. The story, at least, that he wrote, that we have, is in a book called Blowback, and we recommend it. He wrote an essay there telling about the CIA drug operations involving Nicaragua. And it said, of course, you can look up on the Internet at Gary Webb suicide, and you'll find he shot himself in the head twice to make sure he was dead. Go ahead.
Yes, okay. And then I was going into the list of books. I've got one, and you were referring to the operation in Honolulu. And I have two books on that. One is called Disavow. Now, this is based on what the head of that CIA operation told me over a period of years, and it's based upon about seven boxes of CIA documents provided to me by the head of that CIA operation and by the Belli law firm in San Francisco. What this was a major CIA operation based in Honolulu, offices throughout the world, especially in the Far East. And Rewald was the titular head of this. And when a television reporter blew the whistle on some irregularities at the operation, and the CIA took all the money out of the operation and then claimed Rewald absconded with the money. And the trial, that was really a kangaroo trial. But anyhow, after, at first, Rewald got a sentence something like 80 years. But after 10 years, he was up for probation. And I submitted a brief. I don't know if it helped, but he got out. And he turned over all of these documents to me.
How did he feel about the fact that he'd been betrayed by the Central Intelligence Agency? And, of course, they were willing to send him to prison and destroy his life. He was a dedicated patriot. He was working for our government. He was fighting, I don't know who it was, the wicked communists at the time or whoever it was. How did he feel?
Yeah, well, one of the things he gave me, let me put it another way. As I'm going through the boxes, I find this envelope. When I open it, it's an envelope typed of by Rewald, listing the names of six different politicians for which they funded secret bank accounts. And one of those was George Bush Sr. Now, so I checked with Rewald, and so he verbally told me what it was. And there was the code name for the particular politician. Now, this is dynamite, yet it's in the book, and I haven't had one person say anything to me about it. So it confounds me. That it doesn't matter how serious, how documented it is. You cannot get the American public to get off their rear end.
Well,
that's a sad state of affairs.
Well, what our job, my job, is to try to get your information out to people, and I hope if you're listening out there, understand, George Herbert Walker Bush is a member, or was a member, of the Trilateral Commission. His son is the President of the United States today. who, without any justification at all, invaded Afghanistan, because they would have turned our, they would have turned Osama bin Laden over to another country. They would have turned him over to the United States if we'd just shown him the proof that he was involved in the 9/11 attack. But they offered to send bin Laden to another country for trial or to expel him from their country. We didn't want that. We wanted an excuse to go to war and kill a lot of people. Before we invaded Iraq, and anybody wants the documentation, we'll send it to them. The Iraqi government said, we'll let you come in. You don't have to shoot your way in. We'll let you come in. And Saddam agreed to go to another country. They never told the American people that, and they launched the war as quickly as possible because they wanted to kill as many people as possible. And they certainly have succeeded. Over 600,000 Iraqi civilians may well be already dead. But somebody is going to be held responsible in this world, and if not in this world, then the next one. Well, go ahead, Rodney, because I think it's so important people to realize you are responsible for what's going on out there. Not maybe for what you've done, but for what you haven't done. Go ahead, Rodney.
And then one of the other books I wrote, it addresses a series of CIA companies. And this is based upon what was told to me by the heads of these companies over the years.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Rodney Stitz right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Rodney, go ahead. You were saying that the heads of these CIA companies had told you about their operations, and they've got airlines, they've got all sorts of business, banks, and, I mean, they've got a whole airline of their own, don't they?
Oh, they had numerous ones. And as a matter of fact, one of the CIA companies was called Crittenden Air Transport. And Crittenden and I have been in touch for, many years and many, many hours of deposition-like conversations. And he told me how the CIA set him up with an airline, provided the business and the money, how he first had two engine aircraft and flying drugs out of Vietnam and then connecting with, like, Southern Air Transport or Evergreen. Then eventually he got four engines, C-130s. And then so now he's bringing the drugs all the way into the United States, and he's talking about how they flew arms to the Irish Republican Army, which, of course, was a terrorist organization.
But it was also largely controlled by MI6, the British intelligence. Number two man there was a British intelligence agent. So they played both sides against the middle.
But it's really amazing what is going on that the public doesn't know about. Now, all of my books go very heavily into how the media covers up and lies, and how media people are secretly paid to cover up and to plan stories. And this is not only in my book, but other books have been written by people in the media.
But William Odom's book, General William Odom's book, Fixing Intelligence on the Fly Page, talks about the CIA having people planted in the media, journalists planted in the media. Sure, go ahead.
That's basically it. And the books are really interesting. I even find, and you know, when you reread the books that you wrote 3 and 4 years ago, it's fascinating. And when you write so many different books, sometimes you tend to forget, well, let's see, what did I write 6, 7 years ago? And like with Gunter Rusbacher, it's awfully interesting to reread those stories. It's almost like reliving it all over again.
We'll have to get together some other evening, and I'll tell you some of my Gunther stories, and you can tell me some of yours. We're out of time, Rodney. Thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Take care.
Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our evening with Rodney Stitz, a great American. Now, if you'd like to get any of his information on his books, like Defrauding America, Drugging America, unfriendly skies, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And of course, we have that. We have so many other books. If you'd like to know more about the drugging, the fact that we, our government is involved in drugs, we have a 4-tape set with 6 interviews, and you'll actually hear President Clinton, in one of the press interviews, being asked by Sarah McLennan, you know, what about the government drug operation at me at the airport? And you'll hear Bill Clinton saying, well, that wasn't me. That was a federal operation. That wasn't me. That was a federal operation when he was the president of the United States. And he said he wasn't responsible for the drug smuggling at Mena Airport. That was a federal operation. Well, I guess he ought to know. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the 4-tape set on Is There Really a War on Drugs is so important. And we have 4 tape sets on Operation Tailwind and the amazing story of April Oliver, who had the courage to take on the entire establishment, and she won. And not one word in the major media about that. And of course, we have the testimony of Admiral Thomas Moore, a man, really one of the great American military men, who, when he was sworn under oath, violated the orders he'd been given and told the truth. And, of course, he was in his 90s at that time, or in his late 80s, and yet it was amazing how clear his mind was. He just passed away here within the last year. A truly great American. In fact, we can actually hear my interview with Admiral Thomas Moore and our 4-tape set on Pearl Harbor, where we tell you about what really happened and how they left the men there to die. And, of course, what's so interesting about that is Admiral Thomas Moore was a fighter pilot at Pearl Harbor on that fateful day, December 7th, 1941. So you'll hear his story, and we have so many really great stories out there. If you want to hear Colonel Fletcher Prouty, we have 2 hours of him in the JFK assassination 4-tape set. You need to get our information, our JFK assassination, the JFK update, and there's no question at all. There was a coup d'etat, and they simply killed Kennedy because he was not part of the establishment, and they wanted to get him out of the way because they wanted to get us into Vietnam. And, of course, Vietnam was a prelude to the first Gulf War and the second Gulf War, and then the coming class of civilizations, which is upon us. And if you don't read that, believe that, you'll want to get my September newsletter, or I simply quote Henry Kissinger, who is directing our foreign policy in Vietnam, who's directing our foreign policy today, at least according to Bob Woodward's latest book, Under Siege. And Henry Kissinger explains we have 2 alternatives, either to accept the New World Order or face a global catastrophe. That's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. Are you willing to give up your freedom, or do you want to see the whole world go up in flames? And these people would see nothing wrong with that, because these people dream a different dream. They march to a different drumbeat. They worship a different God. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Remember, we do carry the Berkey products. And, of course, you would like to get the big Berkey and the Berkey Light. And of course, you know, you need to get the fluoride out of your water. We can get it out with the Berkey products. Then, of course, if you need to begin laying in a supply of food or health care products, we have the health product catalog. We have the food catalog. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Please remember, we're having an all-day seminar here in the Monterey Bay area, Aptos Seascape Golf Course. That's going to be on the 29th, the last Sunday of this month. I hope you can come. Give us a call to make reservations, 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival, because it's a spiritual battle. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Thank you.
morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great day, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of Yah's creation. It is Wednesday, the 11th of October, 2006, and yeah, it's there. Just gotta, you know, everybody's looking to the sky, blue sky, blue sky, but when you keep on looking up, sometimes you'd miss it. There it is. It's the lion in the sand. This is Dave Von Kleist.
And Joyce Riley, and if you are